We just heard from B-movie director and producer Roger Corman. Now let's listen back to my 1990 interview with Dick Miller, who was in dozens of Corman's low-budget movies, including Bucket of Blood, Little Shop of Horrors, Sorority Girl, The Terror, The Trip, and War of the Satellites. Several of the directors who grew up watching Corman's movies or got their start working for him later paid homage to Miller by casting him in their films. Martin Scorsese, for example, gave Miller the part of a club owner in New York, New York. Before Dick Miller made films, he lived in New York, where he was writing, producing, and directing for TV and theater. He went to L.A. hoping to write screenplays, but he met Corman, who offered him a role in a film.
He was doing his, a second film, a picture called Apache Woman with Lloyd Bridges. And the guy who introduced me said, Dick's a writer. You need any scripts? He says, I got plenty of writers. I don't need any scripts. I need actors. I said, I'm an actor. He said, okay, I'll stick you in a movie. I played an Indian in my first picture. And about halfway through, he asked me, he said, would you like to play a cowboy? I said, you're doing another movie already? He says, no, in the same movie. And I said, you're kidding. He said, no. He said, you come back next week, you'll play a cowboy in town. So I wound up playing a cowboy and an Indian in my first movie. And darn near came close to shooting myself in the final shootout scene at the end.
Did anybody in the audience notice that it was the same person who was a cowboy and an Indian?
I don't think so, since it was so early. I mean, there was nothing to recognize. Nobody could say, oh, I've seen him before. A lot of dark makeup and some nose plugs. And the difference was, you could tell that if you look close, if somebody said that's the same guy, you'd say, oh, of course it is. But I don't think anybody was looking that close.
Did you have to learn how to ride a horse for the movie?
Oh, yeah, the old Hollywood story. Can you ride? Yes, you know. Can you jump out of an airplane? Sure. without a parachute? Of course. You know, they ask you all kinds of things, and you got to lie and say, of course I can do that. I had ridden a little up to that point, horses in stables in Central Park and places like that, and dude ranches, but nothing like cowboys and Indians. And I just figured, I've seen it done, I can do it. And that's pretty much how I learned. I learned on the first picture.
You played the lead in the 1959 Roger Corman movie, Bucket of Blood, and this has become a real cult classic. It was the leading role. You were a waiter in a beatnik coffee house, and you become an artist by covering first your dead cat in clay and then by killing people and covering the corpses in clay and passing it off as sculpture. And once this artist becomes really acclaimed, you also become quite the hipster. Was it fun to spoof the hipster in the movie?
Well, it was made at the height of the coffee shop era. Everybody was going in for espresso.
You mean the coffee house, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the basic idea behind the picture was the hipster coffee house groupies at that time and the people who hung around and the no talents and the talents of that era. And I think later on Roger Corman made a picture called The Trip about the first, you know, big psychedelic outings that were going on, which was a little more serious, but it was also meant to cover that genre of what was happening at the moment. I love making Bucket of Blood. I think it still stands as my favorite picture.
The movie was shot in, I think, 5 days. Can you give us an idea of how you made a movie that quickly?
Well, 5 days was not as tight as it seemed. They were making TV half-hour shows in 2.5 days, and people who had that down had that type of, that was a finger snap.
Right.
People who had that down at that moment could make movies that fast. When I started with Roger, we were making Westerns, and we would make them in 6 days. And that seemed like a fair amount of time. And later on, we got an extra day, a seventh day or an eighth day, and I thought, this is great, what a luxury. So by the time we got around to making a Bucket of Blood, 5 days was kind of a press, but most of the picture was shot in two sets, so it wasn't that much of a push. It's a matter of learning the technique. I think later on, when he made the famous Little Shop of Horrors, which was supposed to have been made in 2 days, and actually 2 days and a couple of spare nights, that also wasn't too much of a push. The people who were involved in it seemed to think, well, 2 days, okay, we'll try it, and if it doesn't work, we'll add another day.
You know, Roger Corman says that Bucket of Blood and Little Shop of Horrors were part of a new genre that he felt he was creating, the black comedy horror film. And I was wondering if you felt that all the actors had a good sense of humor, the kind of sense of humor that would get all of what was happening in the movie, you know, and enjoy the jokes.
I think at the time he was making those films, Roger didn't have the greatest sense of humor. I have to be honest about that. He wasn't quite sure that Bucket of Blood was going to be a comedy. He thought it was kind of a very serious thriller at the time. That's the truth. And all the people involved with him at the time had great senses of humor. I mean, they would... It was not uncommon for us on location shots to play what you would call dirty tricks on Roger, because he didn't quite catch on to what we were doing at the time. But I'm not saying that he was ignorant of the fact that it was going to be a comedy. I think about halfway through, he got the idea that this is funny. You know, these people are funny. And when he finished it, he said, we've got to make another one. This is how Little Shop of Horrors came about. He said, this is funny. We must make another picture just like it.
Give me an example of the kind of dirty trick that the actors would play on Corman.
It wasn't really a group thing. It was, I think it was more Jonathan Hayes and myself. We had an expression, show me what you mean. He would say, we were out in Hawaii shooting a picture. He said, run out there to the end of the coral and look around and then come running back. And we'd say, show us what you mean, Roger. And he'd run out there and come back and his feet would be bloody through his sneakers. I mean, it was just the coral would cut him up something awful. Or he would say, leap over this ditch, grab those bushes and pull yourself into the cane field. Well, we were told never touch the cane, the sugar cane. It's got these little burrs on it. And somebody would say, show us what you mean, Roger. He'd jump, he'd grab the bushes, and we'd take out an hour while somebody washed his hands out.
Well, did he expect you to do it after he proved that this was a really dangerous and impossible thing to do?
Yes. And we'd do it. I mean, once it was shown to us, we said, okay, fine, you know. But we usually took more precautions than he had taken.
Actor Dick Miller is my guest. How come you stayed with Roger Corman for so long, and how long was it?
Let's see. When I went to work for Roger, I was not that serious about my career. I still didn't know if I wanted to be a writer, although I had stopped writing the minute I worked in as an actor in movies. I just said, this is kind of nice. I found it very easy to work for him. He was doing a lot of work, and I mean as many as 5 or 6 films a year, which is unheard of. The studios, you know, major studios barely turn out that kind of product. So I stayed with Roger 5 or 6 years and wound up doing about 35 films for him in that period. The work was easy. It was constant. I didn't have to look for jobs, which is the most difficult part of being an actor, I think. Mm-hmm. And I found myself every couple of months, I'd get a call from him and say, we're going to do another picture and we got a nice part for you. And as the roles got better, it became easier and easier to stay in that position.
Did he always write a role for you?
He didn't write a role for me. I will always be grateful to Roger for the fact that he didn't write roles for me. He let me do almost any part that came up. I think the opening picture was kind of the sign of which way we were going. I played a cowboy and an Indian. Well, you're not going to typecast me that way. You know? You're not going to say, this guy does West, he does cowboys only or Indians only. I suddenly found myself playing rocket scientists, demented busboys, leading men, villains, everything. And he never said, you can't do that part. You know, he'd say, can you do this? Can you do that? I said, I can do anything. And I found myself in 35 pictures playing practically 35 different roles. I don't think many actors get that kind of opportunity.
What was your reaction when you saw people who you were working with become famous, like Jack Nicholson, who had one of his first roles in Little Shop of Horrors?
Well, see, now, that's supposed to be the questions that hurt and really get in deep, but they don't. Jack and I were personal friends for a lot of years. Almost from the time he started making movies, we became buddies. And the relationship stayed that way until he became a huge star, because there is a difference in lifestyles. It's not like your friend is making a quarter of a million or a half a million or even $1 million a year. That you can cope with. He's living a little better than you. But when a guy's making $10 million and $20 million, and I believe he made about $50 or $60 million on his last picture, it becomes almost impossible to maintain a relationship, a personal relationship. because you're either a part of the entourage or, you know, you cease to be a friend. You cease to be part. You become part of the group. So we drifted away from each other. When we see each other, we're friendly, and I think there's probably a great deal of respect for each other there. But as these guys made it, I try to figure out what is it that they have that I don't have. Why is it that the bright teeth or the straight nose or the whatever it is that makes them a star? What got them the edge? I didn't feel bad. I always figured this could still happen to me. Even now, I figure I could still get lucky. Something could come along and I could get lucky and suddenly become hot. You don't have to be a leading man. You could be a John Goodman. You know, you could be a character actor that gets lucky. Something comes along in your career. But basically, if you understand that it is fate, maybe not even that, it's luck. It's luck and not necessarily talent. You can live with it because that luck could be yours too.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Actor Dick Miller recorded in 1990.